when I think about there's, you know, major, how many major leagues there are here in America, at least, you know, at least four major leagues and then 30 teams in a league. And then how many legal departments are there? And I'm able to find myself, you know, working with two professional sports teams right now. And it's, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be here.
Welcome to The Defense Never Rests with Morgan and Akins, your monthly dose of uncommon sense about all things legal and some that are not.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of The Defense Never Rests. I'm your host, Megan Henry, and today I'm joined by Sam Burham, who is Associate Counsel for Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment. So totally different from our normal guests with talking about claims and litigation and things like that. He deals with the New Jersey Devils and the Philadelphia 76ers and a lot of their transactional agreements and deals for, you know, advertising and, you know, everything that goes into putting on a sports event. So I'm super interested in what he has to talk about because it's so different from what I do on a day-by-day basis. And I kind of want to get an inside look on the sports world. So with that said, let's bring him in. Hi, Sam. Welcome to this episode of the Defense Never Rests. I'm so happy to have you.
Yeah, no, thanks, Megan. I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me on. It's awesome.
So I'm excited because you can talk about something totally different than a lot of my guests in the sense that you work, you know, in the sports arena. And for us on the outside, it seems like you just have a really cool job. And, you know, for our listeners, can you just give us like, you know, let us know or let them know what you do on a very brief scale and we'll dig into it a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Associate Counsel at Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment, or as we call it, HBSC. HBSC is a sports entertainment company that have a variety of different sports properties underneath it. So we have the Philadelphia 76ers, the New Jersey Devils, the Prudential Center. We have minor league, NBA, and NHL teams. We have an esports team. There's a venture fund, an innovation lab that works with startups. There's a real estate group. So it's a wide variety of sports and entertainment related properties. And so in the legal department, you know, generally what we do is we provide legal support to all of those properties. And also, you know, all the groups and marketing departments and everyone ticketing within those different properties as well. So, you know, at a high level, that's kind of what we do in the legal department here.
I mean, in sum, you kind of have the dream job that so many of my law school classmates really wanted.
Yeah, no, it was, I always kind of wanted to get, this was a field that I really wanted to get into. You know, I played basketball myself, high school, college, and I actually played overseas before going to law school. And it was something I always really wanted to get into and was super passionate about, getting back into the sports industry. So when I had the opportunity, when this came up, I was, I was super excited as well. It's something that I know, you know, I speak to a lot of, you know, law students and other people as well. And it's, you know, it's to be able to work for a sports team and, you know, not just one, two, you know, it's an awesome opportunity. Yeah.
So, all right. So you just kind of glossed over that. So then you played basketball overseas. So you played professional basketball.
Yeah. And- yeah. I played in Australia for a couple of years before law school, actually. And so, high school, college, and then overseas before law school. And there came a time where I had to sort of make a decision whether I was going to keep playing or maybe do something a little different. It was a really tough decision that I had to make at that time. But there was for a few reasons. It just, you know, it made sense if I wanted to pursue something, and law had always been something that had been kind of discussed. My dad started law school and then went to do something very different and make television. You know, my mom graduated from law school, but she never practiced. So it was always an option. And I really wanted, like I said, to find a way to get back to sports. And so I thought going to law school, pursuing a career in the sports and entertainment industry would be a way where I can, you know, make sports part of my life going forward if the opportunity came along, which it did, lucky enough for me. So that was sort of the genesis of how it all came about, and I ended up, you know, going to law school and then, you know, finding my way to an opportunity in an area I'm really passionate about.
So that's really interesting because a lot of times I have on guests that, you know, their parents, they're like mom or dad was a litigator. And so they kind of followed that path this is the first I've heard that, you know, your parents were lawyers, but they actually weren't practicing.
Yeah,
lawyers.
No. My dad, I think my dad probably did half. So I grew up in Australia originally, actually. So this is back there, but my dad did, I think, I'm not sure how, 1 year, less than a year. And then he decided to make television actually is what he does now. And my mom he graduated from law school, but then went on to work with a bunch of nonprofit companies and get into communication. So they, I guess the value of it as an experience and an education was something that was there, even though they never practiced. So.
Yeah. Well, that's also, I mean, it was probably helpful to go into law school knowing that, you already knew you had a wide base and you weren't, a lot of people I think go and be like, okay, I want to get the top 10% so I can go work at, this big law, or, they had this certain idea in mind. Whereas you probably went in with more open mind that, you were going to gain tools to utilize it in a way.
I think that's right. Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. I think the way we were I was looking at it, and obviously in discussions with, the family around whether it was a good option or not, was that at the very least, it's going to provide you with a set of tools and skills that you'll be able to translate, whether it's practicing, law forever or taking these skills and applying them to something else, was really how we did look at it when I was going into it. It wasn't, I'm going to be litigated for the next 30 years or something like that. It kind of was a building block to something, that take me somewhere, I guess. Yeah.
So while you were in law school, did you already have this mindset that you wanted to get into the sports industry at that point, or did that evolve later?
I think it's a bit of both. I think when I went to law school, I think it's a bit of both, because you find out how hard it is as you get in there. But I think when I started, it was definitely, I knew I wanted to hopefully find my way back to the sports industry. When I was in law school, I was a research assistant for the sports law professor there, Professor Jeremy Duru, who's just, one of the best. And I still, know and talk to him today, talk to him a lot. And I can remember before my 1L summer, sitting down and having a conversation with Professor Duru about what my internship was going to be, whether it was going to be taking something different, but outside of the sports industry, or, working with him and starting to understand the type of issues that come up in the sports and entertainment industry. And just, not on a practical level that I probably deal with now, but more of a legal writing and researching and writing about certain issues and forming a relationship with him. And he didn't, he knew this was something I was interested in. He didn't, he let me decide for myself, but he definitely provided some guidance about what he thought might be the way to go. But I worked with him that summer, and then I worked with him throughout law school. And so it was something I knew I wanted to do. And then I was hoping to find my way back to it. It is tough. I think I talk to students too now, and there's, a couple of routes I think you can take to find your way into the industry. There's some people that go straight out of law school, or there's other people, like me, that might practice for a few years and then sort of transition over.
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely an extremely difficult industry to break into. And I knew a lot of people in law school, and that's what they wanted to do. And I probably was one of them at some point too, just because it has a glamorous, like, it's cool,
and it's different. Sure, I mean, it's different. At the very least, it's different than what other people do. So.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's not. And I want to get into it too, because I'm sure it's not as cool as we all think it is. But on the outside, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like with all these, with any job, really, right? There's, there's things that are really exciting about it, and there's other, administrative type of stuff that everyone sort of has to deal with. But it is great. And I was lucky enough, Professor Duru taught me at American, and then someone I report to now mainly, Dave Reed, my professor taught him at Temple. And so that's how they were hiring to fill a position at HBSE that someone was transitioning internally. And so that's how I, lucky enough, it's definitely a who industry, I think. And so, that's how I ended up being part of the interview process at HBSE. Yeah.
And I mean, that's such an important point too, for anyone who's listening that maybe in law school, is making those connections while you're there. It's something I did not do a good job at. Mm-hmm. But getting close with professors or administrators or anyone there that could help, you can start building your network early, is so important. And it's definitely something I missed the buck on a little bit, I think, and I had to do it later. Yeah. But you just never know where it's going to lead you. And not that you need to make relationships just to lead you somewhere, but making those meaningful relationships can help you down the road.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think that's, it's something I am still not good at today, but trying to always get better at. You know, I'm always, you know, trying to, you know, do better with networking or something. You know, during law school, I wasn't, you know, great at either. But that's definitely, I tell that to every, you know, when students talk to me as well, and building your network from an early age is one of the most important things you can do. And I always tell students as well, you know, there's the easiest way to do this was, which is what I was told too, is there's the Sports Lawyers Association, you know, joining groups like that provide a great opportunity to start building from the ground up and really try to build your network. But no, you're exactly right that it's so important. And yeah, I'm still trying to get better at it today for sure.
I know. I had a friend during college who was extremely good at it. And college, I'm like, what is she doing? Like, what? And now she works for a, you know, a very large streaming company that everyone definitely knows. Yeah. And so I think her networking did very well for her. She was on
yeah.
to something.
I think, like you said, you never really know what might come of it. You know, for me, it was, you know, when I started working with Professor Daru, it was because I was really passionate and interested in it. And I was, you know, hopeful, you know, and one day it might help me, you know, find my way to my career now. But yeah, you just never know what could happen. You kind of have to take advantage of every opportunity, especially, like you said, for sports and entertainment, maybe more than others. It's definitely a who you know kind of industry for sure.
And do you think that, and maybe this is just an obvious question, but your background, you know, in basketball, does that give you like kind of an edge on your side of the industry because you understand you know, both sides of the game?
I think it's kind of interesting, right? Because when it comes to sports law, you know, it's there's not really, you know, we are lawyers, right? We're all lawyers. The practice is lawyers, and sports law itself is just a mismatch of other varieties of law in the sports subject matter. And so first things first, you have to, you know, practice and be good at what you do. But at the same time, it definitely does not hurt. You know what I mean? It shows at the very least that I have an interest in it and I'm passionate about it. And it's something that's been a part of my life, you know, for many years. So it's a hurdle that I don't have to go in there and convince anyone that, hey, this is something I really understand and want to learn more about and want part of my life, because it is something that always has been from a young age and playing a lot. So yeah, no, it definitely helps me, you know, stand out from the crowd and for sure on that side of the industry. But at the same time, there are, you know, it's not like they're just going to hire you because of that, you know, it definitely helps though, for sure.
But I think you and I spoke about this before, but you don't deal directly with players.
No, not exactly. So yeah. What we do is the way I sort of describe it is there's nearly like two verticals. It's like the team operations and the business operations. And so on the team operations side, that's mainly where a lot of the player interaction is. And we do work with the basketball operations department and the hockey operations department, but ourselves, a lot of our work is focused on the business ops side of things. But yeah, no, you're right. So our day-to-day doesn't so much involve interactions with players. It may involve interactions with management on both the ops, the basketball and hockey ops side, but yeah, not exactly players. Yeah.
But it has, even though you don't have direct interaction with the players, having been a player in that setting yourself, you must have a better understanding though, how, you know, certain decisions that come down on and with management and management changes do have a direct effect on the player. So you can kind of, I think in a way you have a good eye on the inside because you know how these things trickle down and what effect it could have.
It's definitely helpful in understanding the industry for sure. You know, a big impact on our business comes from the management of the, you know, the basketball operations and the hockey operations and how those departments operate and manage within them. So, you know, playing it and being a fan of it for before that, it definitely, you know, how the process works, you know, and just how the industry works as a whole, I think this gives you do have a little bit more insight and understanding. It's not, you know, it's not so much the foreign language to you when you're dealing with these things and hearing about them. So I think it definitely helps just as a general base for it, for sure.
So, but does it change your perspective a little bit, you know, like now that you know how the sausage is made, like, does it change your perspective? Like yeah. Being able to, you know, sit down and watch like your favorite team on, you know, any given day, like It might change it a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's actually really funny. So when I started at HBSC, I had, you know, I got NHL TV so I could watch the Devils, and I got, you know, NBA League Pass so I could watch the Sixers and watch all the games. And it's, when you're there, one of the main reasons why I wanted this job was so interesting is because you got to see how everything worked. And I think just from where I was before, the industry is a little bit of a black box and trying to figure out what goes on behind the closed doors there. And I'm sure a lot of industries are like that. I feel like this one was, for me at least, a lot, just not having not much visibility to it. And so now you get to see exactly what goes into putting on a game in front of 20,000 people. And there's so many different things that go into it. You know, even what goes into a simple promotion that you see online for like a contest or a sweepstakes or something, there's so many different things going into it. So I think at the very least, you know, you appreciate it a lot more when you sit there. And I know now I'm sitting there watching a game and I'm going to start talking about, oh, that's the virtual signage, or that's like, oh, that's the court side. And I'm like, I'm looking at all the different types of advertising and stuff. So you definitely see it. You definitely see it from a different perspective. It's different. You look at it differently once you see all the stuff that goes into it, but you appreciate it more, and you're so close to it all the time as well. I mean, in the Prudential Center, I was initially based up in Newark at the Prudential Center, and now based in out of Philly, but you know, the Prudential Center, our offices are at the Prudential Center, so every day you're walking to the arena, you know, through past the rink, and you're right there, and you're so close to it that it's hard to not kind of have a different view of what goes into putting on a game. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I think I jumped over to, you know, that, but really, like, no one has a typical day. I don't have a typical day. You don't have a typical day, but a lot of our listeners and even myself, we don't even totally understand what it is that you do. Like, we just think it looks cool and yeah, it sounds cool. And that, you know, you work, your office was in the Prudential Center. That's pretty awesome. You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can get into it for sure. So a lot of this, you know, one big part of the work that I specifically do is dealing with sponsorship agreements. So we have companies out there that want to partner with the team. And so they, you know, pay us a fee in exchange for that. They get to use our trademarks and logos as part of their advertising, which I'm sure, you know, everyone sees on TV everywhere and on social media. And we also provide them, you know, certain benefits. And these agreements can range from on-court branding. If you see a logo on the court or on the ice, courtside LED, so it's on, you know, there's value to something that, you know, it's TV visible or not TV visible. So there's all different types of benefits that we provide our partners. And so negotiating those contracts is one of the biggest things that we do. And so, you know, whoever the partner is, what commercial entity it is, us in-house, we handle all that work. And then we, you know, draft and negotiate those contracts with the companies, you know, in-house or outside counsel. So that's a big part of what we do. We have the events business at Prudential. So when we host events at the Prudential Center, for instance, we're hosting college basketball tournaments, you know, later on in the year. There's a lot of contracts that go into that with the schools, with the vendors, with other partners that are putting it on. That's another part of what we do. Like I said, working with team operations departments, there might be things around trades, coaching agreements, employment agreements, and you know, interpreting. Also, we interpret, you know, NHL and NBA rules kind of on a daily basis as well. But that's sort of like the high level. But, you know, at the same time, like I said at the beginning, there's so many different properties that we work with. So we also, you know, we'll be working with marketing, and there might be IP issues we need to deal with. We're working with the esports team. There might be issues with them. There is litigation that comes up as well. And so there's always a variety of different areas that we have to operate in. I think the easiest way that I try and, you know, think about it is that, you know, we support mainly the business operations. And so anything that goes into running the business, we have a hand in, which is great experience for me, because we literally see everything. Like, someone in our legal department has a hand in nearly everything that happens there. Yeah.
What about the circumstances that, you know, you have certain licensing agreements with, you know, the teams and the players, and then say there's like a rogue player who does something totally like off brand, or put something on that they're wearing something that's off brand. I mean, that must set off lots of legal alarms.
Like, yeah, I think that any issue like that, that certainly, you know, affects the company, that flows through certain members of the team here, you know, whether it's the GC or whether it's something that flows down. But there's, you know, there's certainly been times where your players or the team have been, you know, associated with certain things that the legal department will get involved in as well. So, you know, depends how high level it is based on, you know, who will be involved in. But yeah, for sure, if something comes up that affects the that affects the team. You know, even from a, even if it's just, you know, from a PR perspective, I know there's, you know, members of our team will be involved in conversations, you know, if it's at a high level as well, even we, you know, with ownership or CEOs or management about how it should be handled, you know, as more of an advice, you know, perspective, but also from a legal perspective as well.
So I wanted to back up real quick though, because, you know, you didn't just start here in this position though. Like how did you pave your path after law school to get where you are?
Yeah, sure. So I was at Deckert, working at Deckert in Washington, D.C., in their corporate securities practice group. So we're doing capital markets, M&A work, general corporate governance type of work, you know, a wide variety of different, you know, transactional law type of stuff. So I was at Deckert for 4 years in D.C. And everyone at Deckert was great. You know, working there, the people were great. There's people there that I still would, you know, see as mentors to today. But after being there for 4 years, I thought I had really developed a good set of skills that I would be able to transition. I think it can be really tricky for someone to go in-house that hasn't had the experience of going through a firm. And that's not to say you can't do it. I know people that have done it and worked with people that have done that. I just think it does get a bit tricky because, you know, the firms are, you work a lot, but it's a really good training ground for learning skills, especially when it comes, I'm sure it's on the litigation side as well, but the amount of contracts I saw in my time there and the type of deals I was working on, you know, large scale, you know, multi-million dollar, you know, huge deals that you're working on at a high level with demanding people. It just provides you with a really good training ground to develop these skills. And I was lucky enough to be working with some people that were great teachers there and working with other great associates. But, you know, after being there for 4 years, I was ready for something probably a little different. And it's hard. I think a lot of people, and I definitely, you know, suffer from this, but when you're working a lot and you have your head down, it's hard to kind of look up and see what else is out there. So I think for most of my time there, I was sort of just working away and trying to learn. And if something came along, it would be, you know, great. It's funny how things work though, is that right around that time after my fourth year was when I was really starting to probably think about, you know, being able to lift my head up a little bit and maybe see what else may be on the future. And that's when this opportunity came up. From, like I said, my professor reached out to me and he knew they were looking, and I was able to find myself to get into the interview process, you know, near the end, and then started HBSC. But yeah, I was at Deckert for 4 years doing mainly transactional.
And I mean, and the bulk of your job is transactional. It is a likely transition, but it makes sense as a transition into your, what you're doing now.
Like, yeah, it does for sure. There's definitely, the skills certainly translate. I think, you know, the skills definitely translate across for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but I think everything always goes back to litigation, because why do we write contracts? Why do we review contracts? Why do we comb through them with a red pen? Is to prevent litigation, or in litigation get, you know, hopefully that we end up on top. So litigation is always probably in somewhere in your mind, whether or not 100%. You might be litigating it or not.
Yeah, 100%.
So even though, like, I think a lot of it is you're still trying to minimize risk for your client. In some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's 100% right. So when we're drafting these contracts, it's, you know, risk allocation and risk mitigation is pretty much a lot of it. We definitely need to make sure the business deal terms are outlined correctly. But I think a lot of the trigger points that people or transactional lawyers and litigators or commercial litigators are used to seeing are probably the same contract trigger points that you would normally deal with. It's just we're focusing on them now in a different sort of subject matter. So, you know, it's really important about payment terms and when we're going to get paid. Termination rights are really important to make sure, you know, when someone can get out of a contract. Indemnification, what we're going to be, you know, compensated for. But then there's certain things also that, so those are all the kind of, you know, the reps and warranties, all that general stuff. I definitely, when I learned at Deckard and what any kind of other transactional attorney would be able to transition across, which is what was helpful. I think a lot of my work is drafting. But for sure, there's stuff that's sports and entertainment specific. You know, for us, we provide benefits to certain, you know, partners, and how you describe that benefit, you know, how you describe the courtside signage, how you describe the jersey patch, how you describe the promotion. That's something that is definitely really important as well, because we need to be really specific with what we're saying, you know, like you said, to make sure to avoid any kind of dispute, we want to make sure that in the contract we really are clear with what we're providing and laying out for our partners. And so that's something that's different, I think, for sure. Something that was more one-off, I would say, that now, you know, due to COVID is more prevalent is what we call make goods or substitute benefits. So something that's really big now is to say there was a, you know, an arena fan promotion, but now there's no fans. So how does that work? And so there was mechanics in every contract around how you work out if we can't provide something. But this was something that, you know, I've been here for a couple of years now, but this was something, you know, before was more of a one-off situation where maybe we couldn't provide something. Whereas now you have entire contracts that you can't, you know, you can't deliver on all these things because, or you have to come up with alternative ways to deliver these benefits because now it's completely different landscape. And so I still remember after, you know, I think it was, so like Rudy Gobert on March 12th, the NBA player got COVID and then the NBA shut down and then the NHL shut down and everyone started shutting down. And I remember having a legal call, you know, the end of that week or something, I think on Friday, about reviewing nearly every contract and every contract to see what these provisions were like, because it's going to come up with every single partner. So those are the kind of things that now are probably more prevalent than it used to be. Yeah.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, because it was one of the things I was thinking about asking you is, you know, when all those, the shutdowns happened with sports, did you have that moment of panic? Shit, am I going to be out of a job? Or are you like, no, there's going to be plenty for me to do?
I think for us, I mean, as it goes both ways, but for us, it was, you know, we are so ingrained in part of the company that we have been busy since, we've been busier during COVID. I think the way I describe it, and probably for a lot of lawyers, it was really like a second job for us. We have the business operations and then we had dealing with everything that was COVID related. So I think we knew as a legal department that we were definitely conscious of the effect it was having on our business. But as a legal department, luckily enough for us, we were necessary. You know, we needed to be there as especially during that time. So I think we felt confident that we were still providing value to the business and that it was something that was, you know, nearly now more than ever necessary for us to be a part of. But it, I mean, yeah, it's you can't hide the effect that it had on the sports entertainment industry.
It was expendable at that time because the waters were all new and every, you know, this needed people to be able to read through everything and figure it
yeah,
out.
Yeah, the amount of new issues, I think it's, you know, it's crazy when you talk about a typical day and you know, everything, and there's always new issues just during the business, but things that we had never really thought about or have thought about maybe theoretically or as something that wasn't really a real risk is all of a sudden very real. And you're looking at hundreds of contracts and hundreds of provisions, and you know, people are negotiating these provisions harder, you know, now than ever before when it comes to make goods and force reserves and things like that. So the effect on us is, you know, we were there and we were ready to go, and we have a great team here, so we knew we'd be needed. So,
well, and also you have all these new provisions that haven't been tested yet in court. Like, so a lot of times you have provisions and contracts that, you know, like this is going to hold up. I know the precedent before it, this, it's going to be fine. But when you're writing these, you have a whole new area that you need to address, and you think you're writing the provisions in the best way, but you just don't know yet because it hasn't been challenged.
Yeah. So I think it's hard, you know, when you're talking about the risk mitigation earlier as well, you know, we're trying to anticipate all these different variables that may impact a contract. You know, we're now thinking mainly, I don't know, maybe now we're thinking even broader than we were before. Stuff that is only once in theoretical, we're thinking, okay, maybe we do need to try and address that in a, you know, the third line of the force majeure section or something like that. You know, we're digging a little deeper and giving you just a new lens on how you're looking at all this stuff, I think.
Yeah. Also, what I go back to is, you know, you were talking about the Prudential Center and how you also manage the actual buildings. And so there's even more provisions you have to put into place as to opening up your arena now.
Yeah.
It was no fans. And then it's limited fans. And I don't know what Prudential Center is now, but I think most of them are back to like
full. I think it was it's definitely tough. So with respect to like the COVID protocols, we take a lot of our lead from the leagues and definitely the state governments and the federal governments and like the CDC. So, you know, we operate in two leagues. We have the NHL and the NBA, and then we operate in two states. So we have Pennsylvania, we have New Jersey. And so there's a lot of different things to keep track of. So a lot of the role of us in the legal department and our government affairs group was making sure we were trying to stay on top of all of that. And you're right, it's definitely changed over time with how many fans were no fans to some fans to, you know, capacity slowly increased to where it is now. And I think it's, you know, our whole goal obviously is to keep the fans safe and keep the players safe and be able to put on an event. But having the concerts there in connection, you know, in addition to the games at Prudential Center, you know, it's the live event business was just hit really hard, you know, all around during the pandemic, and it's starting to come back, like you said, and recovering. And so we're really excited now to do what we can and operate within the protocols and guidelines to start having these events again, which is really exciting for us now too, as well, and for the fans to not have everyone come back.
But, and I mean, and it is a business too. I mean, you have food vendors and you have, you know, like clothing vendors, and you have all these people depending on fans coming in and purchasing goods or food or drink and everything. And when, you know, when all that's in flux, it's really hard to, you know, it's a business.
You're there to make money. Yeah, no, no, 100%. And there's no one's hiding the ball on that either. You know, I think, ticket revenue is one of the biggest revenue generators for us. And when you have, you know, a season and a half or whatever it was with no fans, it's challenging for everyone. And it definitely funnels down to, you know, there's people that rely, you know, people that work concession stands and guest services and ushers, and there's full-time employees and part-time employees. And, it really does affect everyone. And I think we were, as a company, you know, really conscious of that and making sure we could do what we can to take care of as many people as possible.
Now, with, you know, with the management of, you know, Prudential Center or other, you know, other venues, taking COVID out of it, you know, in addition to your, you know, your job doing, you know, mostly transactional, there are, you're going to have trip and falls, fist fights, like you're going to have.
And that's part of my, it has been during my time here, part of my responsibilities as well, dealing with that. And, you know, complaints come in and they funnel up. We have the trip and falls, and we have altercations and disputes, and that comes up all the time, and we get a lot of them. And so we handle those. You know, we initially handle the intake of those, and then work with outside counsel as well to help us manage that process too. But yeah, there's definitely litigation, and for someone that had a purely transactional background, it was a bit of a learning curve coming in. We're fortunately now had another great member of our team join, Esther, who was from the DA's office, I think, in the Manhattan DA's office, I think, of where she came from before this. So she's a little bit more experienced with me than that. But for me, coming from a transactional background, it was a learning curve for sure.
For myself, with the litigation background, I've had many interesting cases involving concerts and concert venues, because a lot of times they not only sue, like say there's a, you know, a fist fight or something, they not only sue the person, you know, throwing the punch, but they often sue the entertainer for enraging the crowd.
I'm not sure I've seen that yet. I have seen, you know, we have a lot of entities, so I've seen a complaint with a long list of HBSC entities on it. They're all, it's unfortunate that it happens for sure, but it's definitely, you know, something we need to, we deal with, and a lot of interesting stories for sure.
Yeah. I mean, when you have that many people coming in through the door, it's inevitable. But it also on your side, when you have the litigation come across your desk, it probably shakes things up for you, but sometimes the fact scenarios can be, you know, your day a little bit.
I was gonna say the things that come up are we try and take, you know, we try and prevent any risk that we can with people coming into the arena, and these things, like you said, still happen. There are things that you would never even contemplate, so it's a bit, you know, we do the best we can, but yeah, you're right that the fact scenarios can be a bit interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as we always say, just because an accident happened does not mean there's negligence. So
No, that's 100% right.
So, you know, in your role, like, I know what keeps me up at night a lot of times. It's the, you know, the fear of, you know, missing a deadline or, you know, something falling off the radar, falling off my to-do list in your world, you know, what keeps you up at night?
I think, you know, for me personally, I'm lucky in the sense that there's not too many things that keep me personally up at night. I think work related, it's, I think we have such a great team here that for me, one of the things is, so we have six people as part of our legal team here that work across all the industries, and everyone has different backgrounds and experiences and been there for different amounts of time. So, you know, the thing about being in-house that was a transition from being at a firm is that the work never stops. The business keeps running. And then because the business keeps running, there's contracts, there's issues, there's questions that keep coming up. So you're, one of the senses similar to what you were saying about, you know, deadlines and prioritizing and making sure we're keeping a handle on the work. Like that's definitely something that is on your mind to make sure that we're giving everything back because if we don't, you know, the business can in a sense get stuck if we're not turning things over fast enough, because everything needs to come through us. So that's definitely something we're super conscious of and making sure we're meeting and prioritizing and meeting deadlines. But because we have such a great team here, those keep you up at night type questions, we really do our best to ask, you know, run everything down and as much as possible before we move forward. And so yeah, either whether it's to the people directly above me or above them, we really try to do a good job of being really collaborative and working together, which is great.
Now, did you have a difficult time transitioning from the firm model to the in-house model? Because I've talked to other people about this, and some people I've talked to have had a difficult time because, like, well, at a firm, you know, you always know you're paying your way, so to speak. Like your worth is there because you're billing your hours, and you know, as long as you're doing that, you're good. But at, you know, in-house, you're no longer doing that. So the mindset's a little bit different. So did you have a harder time transitioning with that? Or was it, you're like, see a billable hour, I'm good without you.
I think the billable hour is it's a necessary evil, I guess, on the law firm side of things. I was happy to not have to bill in tenths of an hour anymore, I think, as most people are when they switch in house. But it definitely is a change and a transition from, I think one of the biggest things is when you're at a firm, you know, you're always dealing with legal colleagues, whether it's other lawyers internally, or you're mainly, you know, you might be with the GC, or you might be with other people in the legal department. So you're always having conversations with other legal, you know, other people with a legal background. When you switch in-house, now you're dealing with a lot more business folks, which is awesome, because I'm really interested in that. You know, it gives you a taste of what kind of goes into it, and you get to see a lot more different areas. But at the same time, you know, not interacting with lawyers all the time can be a bit tricky. And just be able to make sure you're, you know, I think it makes you as a lawyer have to be, you know, mainly in a sense better, that you really have to be succinct and concise about really knowing and understanding what you're asking and the questions you're asking, which when you switch industries, mainly even more so than switching from, you know, in-house, from firm to in-house, but switching to a different industry and needing to learn a new set of terminology, needing to know what, you know, all these different people in the company do. I know I've talked about that with other people in my group, but there's a lot of people at HBS that do a lot of different things, and you know, all play a vital role in, you know, putting on the production of a game or a concert. But you really need to learn what those people do and who to ask the right questions to, you know, what things mean. And so I think that was one of the biggest transitions for me, was just getting more familiar with the company, and it takes time. But that was one of the biggest transitions, is working more with those business folks and being able to explain issues. It was definitely a bit of a transition, but it gets easier over time, obviously, as you form relationships and have a better understanding of who does what.
Well, and sure, because you can't explain things in, you know, legalese all the time. You have to explain it to someone who's not a lawyer so they understand it. Just like, you know, like my husband's an accountant. If he tries to explain to me accounting in accounting terms, like, just, you might as well talk in another language. Like, doesn't work for me.
And I think too, right, as lawyers, we're trained, you know, during law school to kind of think a certain way. And that allows us to do our jobs, but it can be a little foreign, I think, to others, and maybe how we look at things from a different perspective. But I think that's exactly right. And you can't expect, you know, it's we've been doing this for several years, and obviously have a lot of training. So it's easy to send an email to another lawyer about a something that came up to, like a most favored nations clause or something like that. Everyone understands what it means. And then, you know, it's, and you try and think about it. It's like, okay, what exactly, you know, does that mean? And you end up writing a, you know, several bullet point email to try and explain it. But that, that sort of thing comes up. But it's, yeah, it's understandable though.
I mean, I guess that's what they said, or at least someone told me in law school, is the best way to study for a test is to explain it to your mom.
I remember, yeah, I always used to do that. If I had, you know, explaining it to a friend or someone that didn't understand an issue, that's being able to teach it, right? That's what they say. If you can teach it to someone else, you know it. And I think, yeah, during law school, that was, I remember really, I think probably finally understanding that. I think you can get through undergrad a little bit, maybe from a memorization standpoint, but then once you get to law school, it became a, and now in the practically and practicing it in the actual field, you know, really needing to know it and understand it from a ground up is super important.
Yeah, I do think I'd probably be much better at law school if I were to go back now than when I was
I think we all would, yeah. Yeah, I think we all would.
Because I think, and I did take some time in between undergrad and law school, and so but I still went in with that undergrad mentality that it was like the just jam it all in memorization type mentality that it doesn't work. And it took me some time to figure out how that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I thought I would have had it figured out by then because I had that time away, but I didn't.
It's tough. I think it definitely takes, I don't know, a test or two or an outline or two to figure that out. But I can remember, yeah, some of those exams were like a multiple choice securities regulation exam that was not fun. No one really enjoyed multiple choice in law school, but just really having to know what you're doing was, you're right. It takes a little bit of getting used to it. But I think after a test or two, hopefully you at least figure it out or you get reality checked into it. So,
yeah. So if you could go back now and change anything, you know, in your path, would there be anything you'd change or you stay on the course that you're on?
I think, maybe playing basketball for an extra year or two might have been fun. But I think I'm not normally one for someone that sort of looks back and maybe second guesses myself. I'm pretty confident in where I am and who I am and what got me here, which is good. So there's not really too much I don't think I would change looking back. I think, you know, obviously, you know, learning from past experiences and growing and improving is super important. And I, you know, try and do that every day. But from a, you know, a changing anything, I think no, you know, I ended up here after a few years to find my way working for a team. And like I said, confident in who I am, what got me here. So it's good.
Yeah. I would say, I think you're in a good spot. I would agree though, maybe another year or two of basketball.
I know it wouldn't have been too bad, but it's tough. When I think about there's, you know, how many major leagues there are here in America, at least, you know, maybe four or five, depending on which ones you count, you know, at least four major leagues and then 30 teams in a league. And then how many legal departments are there? And I'm able to find myself, you know, working with two professional sports teams right now. And it's, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be here. And so happy to have it and happy to see, happy that I got here. So.
Yeah. And so what advice would you give to like someone, you know, I don't want to say follow your footsteps, but, you know, break into your field. Cause as we talked about, it's not easy to get in.
I think like we talked about a little bit, you know, it's really important to start networking and forming relationships at an early age. I've seen people get jobs, you know, purely from a text thread about people that are, you know, posting. And so, you have to make sure you're exposed to the right, you know, the right opportunities and the right people so you can really get those, get those other opportunities that are out there. So I think trying to network is really important. And then, you know, the most tangible way I can tell people to do that is from a sports perspective, at least, is to, you know, join the Sports Lawyers Association is a great first step as a young lawyer to try and get exposed to it because it is really hard to get into. The other thing I also, you know, tell people as well is that there's no sort of one path, right? So there's the path that I took where I went to law school and then I practiced at a firm and tried to get some really good experience before transitioning, which is what some people do. Other people might try and work for a team right away. So there's a couple of ways you can get in there. But it is challenging. And I think networking and trying to build your network from a young lawyer is one of the best things you can do. To try and, you know, to actually try and find yourself there, hopefully one day. Yeah.
I agree. And I say this a lot to people is, and not being bashful about reaching out to your network. I mean, the worst someone's going to say is no.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think it's very, and I had a hard time doing this too. It's very hard to reach out to someone you don't know and ask for help or advice.
I think especially to, I mean, through your alumni networks is I know I speak to students pretty often that reach out through either, you know, a professor or through another connection. I wouldn't say don't be hesitant. People are always happy to share their story and try and help. I know I am, especially for people that are from American, where I went to law school, to try and help build, you know, more people. I would like to see more people in this industry from school, and trying to help build the department there as well. So it's, I think always reach out, and starting a nice sort of easy starting point is, if you're fortunate enough to have people from your industry, from your school that are in your industry, that can always be a great starting point.
Yeah. I know, like when I graduated law school, like the firm I had summered for, decided they couldn't take on summer associates. They couldn't hire their summer associates. So I was like, great.
I've heard that story a couple of times. Yeah.
Yeah. So now what? Okay. Now I need to like start applying. And then I happened to graduate in 2007 when, you know, the economy completely collapsed. So I was like, great. Yeah, so yeah. I went through like as every law firm I could find in the Philadelphia area. And I just tried to find people who went to my undergrad, and I would just send them an email.
Yeah.
And ask for help, and just ask for like help with my resume and coffee. And yeah. Like that, just doing that, at least I landed some. Then they were like, oh, well, my friend at so-and-so firm is hiring. So they would send my resume to their friend versus me just sending my resume blindly to that person, which at least got me an interview. Because if you just send it blindly, chances, who knows?
Yeah, I think in sports too, is like, I'm not sure. I heard one story recently about someone sort of getting something via cold call, nearly, but it does not happen often in the sports world. It's tough in general, does it happen, but especially in the sports and entertainment industry, does someone get something from a straight cold call response? It's challenging to do it that way. So you're most likely going to need to know someone to be able to get your foot in the door. And then, you know, once you get that opportunity, you got to kind of roll with it and take it from there. But yeah, I think that's right.
Since you've been, you've been in-house now, how many years? Four?
About 2 years. So I was at firm for 4, and then now about coming 2 years in-house. Okay. Yeah, about.
So in your 2 years, you know, you came and you had a, you know, really great background at Decker, you know, really awesome, really good firm, really strong firm, but you still come in green, right? So you had to have had some embarrassing moments during that time. Is there anything that you could share that you're like, it was one of those times like, oh my God, I can't believe they hired me.
I can tell a pretty good story. So so what they do on the devil side, at least where I was initially based, is to have you up there in Newark, and we have every Fridays at the time, there's a meeting with everyone, and that morning there's a group of guys who used to play pickup basketball in the morning, which the CEO used to come in, Scott used to give us a good run, and Jake the president still would come as well. So we've just been playing in the morning, and then we get up to the I think it's my second week or something when I'm there, there's a standing meeting which is around the Devil's logo. No one in my department, what they do is they call up the new people and you just kind of give a little introduction and talk about yourself. But no one in my group kind of gave me the heads up. You're probably not supposed to walk right across the logo, which I probably should have known. So in front of the entire company, I proceeded to do that and then get yelled at as I had to walk backwards across it. And then I had to kind of show a talent and ended up trying to juggle some coins out there in front of, you know, every single management, every executive in the company. So that was a great starting point. So if I didn't, you know, if I'm still here after that, it's good. But no, I think that there's been a bunch of other times, just like I said, getting used to the company and trying to just get a feel for what people do. I mean, I've asked a lot of stupid questions in my time there, but probably necessary ones in order to learn and have an understanding of what exactly goes into, you know, putting, like I said, like putting a game on and what's, you know, what kind of signage that is and everything, which a lot of people for that is, you know, their bread and butter. So I think there's a lot of questions I probably asked that are necessary, but at the time, I'm sure there are, you know, it's a tough transition process to a new industry. So
Yeah, but maybe someone should have given you a heads up about that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I think my
guy.
My supervisor was like, "Oh, I should have told you. I didn't tell you about that." I was like, "No, you didn't tell me about that." Just there's, you know, there's two presidents there and the CEO and everyone, and it's about 60. I don't know how many people it was, but it was it was great. The company is great. Everyone. One thing about working in sports too is that, you know, there's a certain, probably a certain type of person that has this, you know, that wants to be in that industry, and it's tough to, not even in legal department, you know, it's tough to get into it at certain other parts. So people are passionate about what they do. People are energetic. People are excited about what they do at HPSC. So it's, you know, it's great to be able to come to work each day with those people. And yeah, to be honest, working with the people in the legal department, you know, they're all people I, you know, enjoy talking to all the time. So it's, you know, it's great coming there and being around a group of people that is really supportive like that. So.
Now, are some of your colleagues, are they from similar backgrounds in the sense that they also played, you know, sports on a collegiate or professional level, or is it split?
Yeah, so I think actually a lot of the people are, you know, interested. You may probably have a passion about sports. I think in the legal department, we're made up of mostly people that come from a firm, previously a little bit of time at a firm. Or Christine, one of the great people on our team, she's been doing working around operations and arenas for a long time as well, but she has a very different background early on in her career. So, you know, Brad, the GC, was at Proskauer for a number of years. Dave was at Proskauer. We've got someone from the Warriors who was at a firm who came over, and, you know, so like I said, someone from the DA's office. So it's a really good mix of people that we have in the group. I think we try and do a job of finding the right people. And, you know, Brad and Christine and the people at the top do a great job trying to hire people. But I think mainly it's, you know, people that are either have an interest in, you know, you've got to have an interest in the sports, sure, and entertainment. Otherwise it doesn't sort of make sense to make the jump, especially from the big law sort of lifestyle. And so I think you'll find people, whether they played at some point, you know, whether they played or maybe they're now coaching their kids or something like that. There's people that are passionate about sports and or entertainment at some level. And I think that's probably what the commonality is amongst us, is that we, you know, we're excited about being there. And like you said at the beginning, Megan, you know we're all still lawyers, but, you know, you get a kick out of having your office be in the Prudential Center and walking through the arena, or you get a kick out of going to the game early and be able to watch warm-ups from courtside. There's certain things like that people in our, you know, the people in our company also, we'll all get a kick out of, all appreciate, all really like to be a part of. So I think that's sort of the commonality amongst us there.
But really what I'm getting is, when you're playing that pickup game, do you have to hold it back a little bit if you're playing with like some higher ups that you meet?
We call it the Turnpike Throwdown, which is like a company-wide basketball tournament that we put on. And so I still remember it was my first year. So if there's a tie, it's basically a tournament that everyone just put into teams. There's like all throughout the company, everyone's in teams. If there's a tie at the end of the game, it goes to free throw shooting. I was doing a free throw shootout against the CEO Scott, the previous CEO Scott at the time. And I beat him and knocked him out. But then the next game, I had a shootout against Jake, the president of the Devils, and he beat me. But I like to say that it probably wouldn't have been the best look for me to knock both the CEO and the president out in one go. But no, it's great. There's a lot of people there that are former athletes, like you said, in some way. And the pickup games can be good and can get competitive. And definitely a bit of talking back and forth. So it's for sure, there's a lot of people that are either passionate about it or played it.
Yeah, and see, and then you still get some extra basketball time.
Yeah. I love playing pickup still. It's been a little bit now during COVID, but it's great to be able to have, just be able to have that as part of the, you know, as people at the company that like to do something like that. So it's another perk of, you know, being in a sports industry. So.
Yeah, and I can imagine, and I guess this is just an outside perception, that the overall culture is a positive one. I think when you're in the entertainment industry and your job is to, you know, whether it be put on a concert or a professional sporting event, is to entertain people, I think you tend to build a team of people who are pleasers and like to work to make other people happy. So you kind of work together.
You're right. I think like the culture is super important. And I know it's something that at HBSC we really, you know, value and drive and put a lot of effort into building that culture. And the energy, you know, the kind of energy that people have that work there, and it is definitely a very positive, you know, energetic place to be. And everyone there has that sort of same similar attitude. And I think, you know, not to say that working at somewhere, you know, at a firm isn't great, but it's definitely a little different when you have, you know, maybe there's a whole floor of ticket sellers right below you that are celebrating a sales goal, and there's a lot of cheering and jumping around and stuff like that. So there's different aspects of it, but yeah, it's a great, you know, a great culture, and everyone is always positive and energetic. And, you know, you build a team of people like that. It's a collaborative, people there want to be part of a team, want to play their role and be collaborative. So,
yeah. And I think that is a big step away from firm culture, because in some respect, firm culture can be very competitive. I mean, you go into law school is competitive by its very nature. And then, especially if you're in big law, like you were, it's competitive. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't work in big law, but I had a lot of friends who did. And my understanding, you are fighting a lot of times to get, you know, better assignments or bill more.
I've heard stories about other firms that will not be named about, you know, what can go on there. But for Deckard, I think I was lucky at Deckard in the DC office, at least there with who I worked with. You know, we were a really good group of people, but it definitely is different in the sense of, I mean, the billable hour, you know, bonus isn't hanging over your head all the time throughout the year. And the constant grind to meet deadlines, but, you know, the 2 a.m. emails can be, you know, can be a bit rough from time to time when you're on the firm side. And really, you know, it's kind of a, you know, deliver no matter what approach there, which, you know, not to say that we don't have the same approach here internally. I know that we see ourselves as our own little law firm that provides us a service to the entire company. And it's a grind on this end too sometimes as well, but definitely the culture is definitely different, you know, from the firm, just the general atmosphere over there. It's what we and how we work over here. You know, getting tickets to games and stuff like that doesn't hurt as well. So.
No, I'm sure you probably get good tickets too, not nosebleed tickets.
We do all right. You know, the last Sixers game I was at was unfortunately the game 7 when we got knocked out, but was there with the GC Brad and Dave as well. So it's a nice perk for sure.
And did you develop becoming a fan of your teams, or were you previously, you know, a Devils or Sixers fan, or do you just kind of have to be now?
No, I want to be. So I'm definitely a big Devils fan and a big Sixers fan. I was being in the DC area, you know, kind of was always a bit of the Wizards, but it's now, like I said, as soon as I got NHL TV, so I could watch the Devs, got the NBA League Pass to watch the Sixers. And so now it's great. You know, I think you even have more appreciation, like we were saying earlier, when you see what goes into putting a game on, you know, going there. Now we're definitely fans of the team. And when you're more connected to it as well, when you hear, you hear stuff going on and can be a part of certain conversations. And it's just interesting to see how things are getting thought about internally. And so you kind of, the more connection you have to something, obviously the more interest you are. Yeah. And that's definitely a case for me now when I wasn't doing a lot of hockey following before, but now I'm, you know, watching there and watching a lot of Devils games and really, you know, over the last 2 years, I've watched a lot more than I watched before. So it's, and always watching a lot of basketball games and getting to go to games too and getting that experience is awesome.
I mean, I live in a hockey, my husband played hockey, so it's hockey here all the time.
He used to
joke at me, it would be like, I don't know, the middle of the summer, and he'd wake up in the middle of the night to watch some, you know, international junior championship.
he's really into it. But like you said, you have all, everyone, like we were saying, everyone at the company sort of is interested in it as well. So we have our own finance team that, you know, they're there watching hockey games too. So it's everyone kind of gets into it. But we have a team doing well as well. It's awesome. And like we had the Sixers this year, we had a, you know, wish we had gone longer, but had a good playoff run for a little bit. Is super exciting for the entire company to be a part of.
Yeah. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wouldn't want to jump off without mentioning this. So, you know, sports is so cyclical, you know, there's in season, off season, but you know, right now you're in the off season for both your school, I guess, well, hockey starts soonish, but
both off seasons right now. Yeah.
So is the off season, like, is it a little calmer or is it a big push? Cause you have to get all this stuff done before.
Yeah, no, that's a good question for sure. So it's kind of funny. I think it's nearly our busier time. So right now, you know, during COVID, there's a little bit of there was a lull when it comes to, I think, the uncertainty for everyone in every industry created a little bit of hesitancy maybe around, you know, spending dollars. But as we're getting back and the leagues are coming back and games are coming back, this summer has been really active with a lot of deals coming in, and some big deals as well that we're excited about. So I think the off season is nearly busier because we have everyone gearing up for everything in the season, whether it's, you know, new vendors they want, new features they want, new marketing tools they want. You know, there's all those kind of contracts that need to come through us and we need to look at. So in addition to, like I said, all those sponsorship agreements we're doing, which are super important, you know, some software or system that the ticket sellers need to be able to make sure they can do the best they can do reaching out to fans is just as important as well. So we right now is, yeah, like everyone is gearing up, ready to go. So the cycle kind of it ebbs and flows, but now it's definitely flowing for sure as we get into the seasons when it comes to people trying to get their deals done. And then once the season comes along, it's a little bit of different busy where things pop up here and there, but they want to do, but things start flowing and going. But right now everyone's trying to get geared up. So it's definitely busy.
Yeah. I that's what I kind of anticipated, was that maybe you didn't have the most relaxing summer.
The beginning of the summer, people like to maybe, you know, try and get into that summer slang. But for us, because we're a part of every part of the company, you know, we're going to see, you know, some department, like one or two departments might be slower, but another one might be busy. And if they're busy, you know, we're working. So it all kind of connects back to us in a way. And so, it's been the off season is the time to try and really get prepared for the next season for our department and for the rest of the company. So it definitely can be busy. Yeah.
So I usually ask this question as my last question of all my guests or most of my guests about a movie that they'd watch, you know, what movie can you watch over and over? However, I feel like for you, it's more appropriate. There's I think big sports fans always have that one clip that, you know, that famous sports clip that they can watch, you know, sit down and watch anytime that's on. Is there anything that stands out to you? It's like your favorite clip that you will watch regardless.
I think the one that probably, you know, unfortunately in one way stands out recently is the Kobe clips. You know, I've seen, Kobe's last game is something that I've seen more than once, watched the highlights of more than one time. You know, that was for the whole sports world was tough for everyone, but those clips of him in his last game when he put up, I think, 60 in the, you know, at Staples Center in front of that crowd in his last game is something that I can watch all over again, just, and the way it went too, when it was a bit of a slow start and he really came back at the end and put it together. But that's one that stands out for sure. And then there's probably a few others, but that's the first one that comes to top of mind, especially recently. And then I see here and there, because those it's just amazing. It's just amazing. I mean, what a way to go out. It's insane.
Yeah, I remember that as well. It was, you know, he was definitely, you know, a goat.
it was one of those, you know, you kind of remember watching it and where you are, and I still remember following it and maybe flipping back and forth because it wasn't, you know, maybe it wasn't going so well. And then at the end, you know, he's got 60 and it's, you know, it's crazy. But that's the first one that jumps to the top of mind for sure. That was, crazy. What a game.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thanks so much for sharing. It also reminds me just of like my, it's so reminiscent of Michael Jordan and, you know, in, you know, his, championship games, how you could just like turn it on and turn the whole game around too.
There's all those guys, I think. Now we're seeing more and more documentaries coming out too, getting behind the scenes. And I love being able to see how all that works, but I really get a kick out of those for sure too. It's great.
Well, Sam, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate you taking the time and giving us like a look behind, you know, the sports curtain, even though you can't give us all, you know, the details, but I loved hearing a little bit about what you do and getting like an inside look. So thanks so much for sharing that with us.
No worries at all. I mean, thanks so much for having me on. I always, you know, like to talk about what we do and hopefully give others a little bit of that insight that, you know, I really was looking for when I was, you know, trying to think about what it was like to be in the sports entertainment industry. So, you know, happy, thanks for having me. And, you know, it was great. I appreciate it.
And, you know, just let any listeners who are in law school or have any questions about getting into the industry, why don't you give them your info and they can, if they want to reach out to you and get, you know, some healthy advice.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, my email is just my name, sambarum@hbsc.com, S-A-M-B-U-R-U-M at hbsc.com. I'm always happy to answer questions and reach out, you know, obviously on LinkedIn as well too, and other platforms as well. So always happy to reach out and talk to anyone that's interested. More people in this industry, and the better, I think. So that's great.
Well, thanks so much. And for our listeners out there, if you like what you hear, please subscribe to the Defense of Arrests at Apple Podcasts.